I despise your killing and raping. You're despicable.
Are you my judge?
It's just, you should be punished. I'm going to chop off your arm. So are you ready?
Hell yeah, I'm ready. Welcome everyone back to Age of Cinema Fusion. I am your host, Paul Martinez. We are here with, this is now our sixth episode. Wow. Never thought I'd ever get one up, and we've got six. We are still over at the New York Asian Film Festival. And that's what we'll be talking about in this episode. We're going to review four more films that I screened at the festival. What a wonderful time. As I'm recording this, the festival is over, unfortunately. It's always a sad time when the festival leaves town. There is some more stuff going on. Japan Cuts is still going on. I plan to go catch one or two flicks over there before it closes out. The Asian American International Film Festival, if I'm saying that correctly, that is beginning now. And I might try to catch something on there over the weekend. And I remember I was mentioning to you guys about the Korean Film Festival. And I thought it was like in August, September, but apparently it's in November. So yeah, good. My memory is as I'm getting older. So that's a bit of ways, but still I'm excited to hear about that. I also found out about another Asian film festival that's taking place in Washington, D.C. at this time, playing a lot more old school stuff, old school Hong Kong. It's a Hong Kong film festival, playing some classic Hong Kong stuff, Shaw Brothers stuff, as well as some 80s action and new stuff. And so you never know, I might plan a trip to D.C. This time next year. But that's then, and this is now. And we're going to talk about our first film. It's called Social Phobia. This came out in 2014 from Korea. Directed by Hong Suk-jae, this is his debut film. It stars Byung Yo-han as Ji-Woong. You might have seen him in Cold Eyes. Great film, by the way. And Yi Ju-sung as Yong-min. He was in the film UFO, which I did not see. I heard varying reports about it. Some liked it, some hated it. So on one of those, maybe when I get time one day, watch this. My tagline, which is not becoming a thing, which I guess I'm doing with every film, I'm kind of creating my own tagline. And my tagline for this film is, when cyberbullying gets real. What is this film about? Well, a group of young tweeters go to confront a notorious cyberbully. But when they arrive, they find her dead. Was it suicide, murder, or something else? These young men will go to great lengths to discover the truth. Here is now the second film I have seen dealing with the very brand new world we live in. The world where social media rules. It's a stark look at how the millennials view cyber reality as almost an equal to the physical one. The first being the wonderful Japanese drama, The Snow White Murder Case, which kind of got into the whole trial by jury in a public forum kind of a deal. This is a little different take on social media, but still, as you can see, this is the social media world. We'll probably see a lot more films delving into this. Kudos to the director, Hong Suk-jae, who was inspired by true events to make this film. He captures the angst as well as the overall attitude of people who have the ability to lash out at others from behind a keyboard. It's easy for some of us to say, it's just Twitter or Facebook, right? You know, it doesn't matter. But to young people today, social media is the main language spoken, and to refrain would be social suicide. So, you know, that's really what this film talks about, and it's very interesting. There is a kind of a mystery here, a murder mystery, or is it a murder type of deal? And I don't ever like to give spoilers away, so of course I'm not going to tell you what happened, but there are a lot of suspense in this one. There are a few turns. that you may not see coming or you may see coming. I will say it was a splendid performance by Byung Yo-han in his first starring role. The cast is made up of young men, not all are great actors yet, but no one really bad either. There's not much I can say in the way of action, but like I said, there is some tense moments, there is some suspense. I think it's not riveting, but interesting film. And something that I would like to see Hong Sung-jae follow up and see what he's got under his sleeve next. I think this is a decent first film for him. Like I said, it was an interesting film. It's not riveting. It's not like, oh my God, you must see this film. But it wasn't a bad film either. I gave the film a 6.5 out of 10. Our next film. Well, I wanted to talk about this one. Robbery. Came out in 2015 out of Hong Kong. This is directed by Fire Lee, another debut filmmaker. Starring Derek Tang, who you should know from The Thieves, Z-Storm, a bunch of other stuff. Jay Ari, who I really don't know from anything. And the star of the show, really, in my eyes, Lam Sweat. Lam Sweat, a veteran of Hong Kong films, probably best known for his role, his incredible role in PTU. Also had a nice role in Eye in the Sky, amongst countless of things. Look, Google Lam Sweat. You've seen him in countless films, almost never the star, always a supporting actor, but great at it. My tagline for this film is, the real crime is life. Now, what is this about? Now, this is a very dark black comedy. You almost feel bad laughing at some of the parts, but can't help yourself. The film features a young man going nowhere in life. He decides to take a job at a 24-hour convenience store. He really doesn't take the job seriously and spends the night goofing around. Then a man comes in, and one thing leads to another, and he decides to rob the store. The rest of the night, both the robber and the employees must deal with the various characters that are still walking in. The film, while funny, genuinely funny, has a very angry tone. There is violence, a lot of violence, maybe more violence than any comedy should be allowed. Then you realize, although you're laughing, this isn't fun. It's hilarious in its absurdity almost. I tell you, this is unlike anything I've seen before. The underlying theme is the bleakness of the future for young Chinese men post-China takeover of Hong Kong. What was once a thriving place of industry is almost a third world levels of poverty right now. And, you know, we talk about the 1% and financial inequality here in America. It's much worse in Hong Kong right now than it is here. I mean, you wouldn't even believe how bad it is. It is really bad. And that's really a shame because there was a time when Hong Kong was just, that was like, they were making money. You know what I mean? I mean, there was just, I mean, printing their own. It was just, they were doing incredible commerce, and China came over, put a lot of restrictions. A lot of people left Hong Kong. The movers and shakers left. And what's left there now is, you know, just a few people that stood because just how much money they could still make there. But what happens is that little bit of people give nothing to the poor, as, you know, as you wouldn't think they would. And there's no jobs. There's nobody that can, nowhere to pay for housing and anything. It's just a really, really bleak situation. Fire Lee, a young man, is making a movie here, and you can just tell that this is, he's angry. He's making his film, and he's kind of like laughing at himself and laughing at their state. But at the same time, you know, really seriously upset about what future is left for Hong Kong. So this is a really, really film that should be seen. You know, do I like this film? Well, I really love the entire cast. Lam Sweat is especially creepily funny. But this is not a perfect film. I mean, and nor would you think it would be by a brand new director. But it does show a lot of promise for him. And overall, I give it a 7 out of 10. And again, it's not squeamish, not gory, but there is a ton of violence that at times is almost shocking. Like I said, I saw this at the New York Asian Film Awards, Grady Hendrix, who introduced the film, called the most nihilistic film of the festival, and that's an understatement. Okay, we're moving on now to our old school selection. As it works out, I did catch an old school film at the New York Asian Film Festival. And what I caught was the very surprisingly good Cops vs. Thugs, 1975 out of Japan, directed by Kenji Fukasaku, the late Kenji Fukasaku, who, if you don't know, you should know, directed Tora, 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 and the amazing Battle Royale. And that alone, the fact that he directed Battle Royale, sort of made me know to try to look for some of his other stuff. So, this is a great find for me to watch at the festival. It stars Bunta Sugigawa as Tamatsu Kuno, who you would definitely know from Battles of Our Honor and Humanity. Hiroki Matsukata as Kenji Hiratani, who know best from 13 Assassins. And Mikio Narita as Katsumi Kawade, known for the original Graveyard of Honor. My tagline for this one is, you know, cops versus thugs, but which are the good guys? What is this film about? Well, okay, two Yakuza clans are at war with each other, but the police are backing one side over the other. When they get a new chief who forbids them to show any favoritism, it causes a rift between the detectives and the Yakuza clan who relied on their cooperation. This is just a masterfully done film. Japan was very ahead of their time with complex stories like these, which are much more commonplace in today's films that we see. Japan was very ahead of their time with morally complex situations or what have you, and that's what we get here. It earned director Kenji Fukasaku a Blue Ribbon Award, as well as one for Best Actor for Sugawara, who was tremendous in this film. His scowl was wondrous, as was his laugh. The story does go off in a weird direction with some land deal, which I think wasn't really necessary to the story, but still didn't take away from the main narrative. Loads of violence and some sex in this one. Not all that uncommon for the era it was made in, though. It really helps paint the dark picture instead of glamorizing the gangsters. Filmed in black and white, which also works really well here. This is a movie about bad people doing bad things, cops and thugs alike. Much like the Ringo Lam films we have recently reviewed here, we also see the dynamic of friendship shared between a gangster and a cop, and the combustible ending to that friendship. A film that story-wise still holds up today. I give this a 7 out of 10, I should say. It's definitely a good watch, definitely a film that you should seek out. Cops vs. Thugs, you can also catch Battles Without Honor and Humanity, another great gangster film from Japan from the same era. Both these films should be watched. I didn't catch Battles Without Honor and Humanity at the festival. I saw it a long time ago. I'm not going to review it without rewatching it. I like to have a fresh aspect of a film before I talk about it here. So, you know, that'll probably be done a little later on. But, yeah, as far as Cops vs. Thugs, I didn't even know of this film until I heard about it at the festival. And I'm so glad that a good friend of mine wanted to go see it. I went with her, and it turned out to be a great idea. So, definitely check out Cops vs. Thugs to get a chance. Highly recommend it. Very good film. Now, we go to a wild card. And remember now, this is kind of a special edition of Asian Cinema Fusion because we're only talking about films that I've screened at the New York Asian Film Festival this year. So, usually our wild card selection, if you've been listening, as you know, is usually films that I think are under the radar, not widely known, but are definitely good watches and something you should seek out. Well, this week, it's going to be a little different. This is a film, not widely known at all, very under the radar, but I think you should stay away from. Again, this is just my opinion, guys. I'm not a professional movie critic in any way. I'm just a layman talking to you guys about movies I watch and movies I love and my opinions on them. You know, I'm going to always be honest with you, and if I see something I don't like, I'm going to tell you I don't like it. I'm going to tell you why I don't like it. And, hey, if you think you want to check it out for yourself, by all means, even movies that I may not like, I have no problem with anybody going to screen themselves, because the whole point of what this podcast is about is to let people know about the great world of Asian cinema, and I want that to grow, and I want people who've never given it a chance to give it a chance. That's what this show is about. For those people who are not that into it, to try to help them with a guide of what to watch. You know, open up a new world. If you're a movie lover, you know, if you're not a movie lover, if you don't like American films, you may not like Asian films, and that's fine. But if you're a big movie lover, if you just really love watching movies, there's a world of it that you may not be opening yourself up to. All right, so back to what the film that we're speaking about. We're speaking about Violator. This is from 2014 in the Philippines. This actually might be my, I think, first Philippine film I watched. For some reason, I'm pretty sure I saw another Philippine horror not that long ago. This is directed by Dodo Dayo. Again, another first-time director. That should be the tagline of this show. He is a former film critic, which makes a lot of sense when you watch this film. Starring Victor Neri, who is one of the bigger names in Philippine movies, and Anthony Falcon. My tagline for this is Evil Has Entered. What's this film about? Okay, as a hurricane approaches Manila, you start to see acts of suicide and violence. Some say it's the end of days. A small group of men are trapped in a police station with a teenage boy. Some feel the boy is possessed, others think it's hogwash, but as things spiral out of control, the question looms, has the devil come to Manila? Okay, I've talked to some people whose opinions I respect, one of them being the aforementioned Grady Hendrix, a great man, and I really respect their opinions, and they have really liked this film. But I just cannot agree. It's not garbage. There is a series of very unnerving visuals which stay with you. The first half of the film is paced in a very haphazard way. It's surreal in every sense of the word. There is a very discreet buildup of suspense that comes upon you all at once. Very cleverly done. But the ending comes and you're sitting and saying to yourself, wait, what? Is that it? That's the overall feeling I had about this film. The acting is very good by some here, especially Victor Neri and Timothy Mabilot, who plays the teenage prisoner. There's not a lot of scares, but there's an overall sense of uneasiness. Now, looking on after I saw this film and trying to understand what was so great about it, I read some reviews online, and I really try never to do that just because I don't want anyone else's reviews to influence mine, you know. But I was pretty much already set in how I felt about this film going in. I just wanted to hear other people's thoughts on it. And something I heard was that this film was called very David Lynchian. And I could see that. And it makes sense because I am not a big fan of his either. I find this film to be too surreal and slightly pretentious. I get the feeling of a man who made a film to show how smart he is, rather than making a film that people will enjoy. And I told you in my opening monologue of the very first episode of this podcast, this is not for the more learned cinephiles. This is for the layman, for the everyday movie lover. And I just don't think this film will appeal to that audience. I think this film appeals to film critics, which is what he is, a film critic. I think it maybe refers to people who look at films, who just look at films a different way than some of us laymen do. As I said, there was another podcast about Asian films that was out there. I don't know if it's still out there or not, but I always feel like this would be a film they would probably love. But I didn't like the show because I just felt it was too much, I don't know, introspective looks at films. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being very deep and, looking at films in that way. It's art. And everybody views art in their own way. Some people can go to an art gallery and see a picture with blotches on it and, be taken back by the power and everything of the art. And other people walk in and be like, that's blotches of paint on a canvas. I see nothing. At the same time, that person, though, may look at a beautiful portrait and be like, oh, now that, I see a person. I see something that's real to me, and I think that's great art. And someone else may be, that's nothing, So in other words, it's like that abstract, non-abstract thing. I think this is a film for the abstract thinking minds, which I'm not, I guess. And I think most laymen aren't. So this is just, I think, if you're that type of film, I would say, if you're a fan of Wong Kar-wai, or David Lynch, this may be up your alley. But for me, the flying off in different directions and then the open-ended ending felt flat. And that just took away from the better points of the movie in my eyes. And there were some good points in this movie. I definitely could see Dodo Diao has some skill. Like I said, some very interesting visuals that stay with you. And that was very good. His very underscored buildup of suspense was well done. I found myself really very transfixed on the film for the first half of the film. But as I sat there, the film was moving on toward the end. I was, waiting for it to get to that, bam spot. And it just ended without ever getting there for me. So, in my opinion, this is not a film I liked. But like I said, if you like abstract type of films, then maybe this is up your alley and you should give it a shot. But for me, I gave it a 4 out of 10. That's just my opinion on it. Now, talking back at the New York Asian Film Festival, I was able to talk with a couple of the guys there. I was able to use my recorder to record a few questions I asked. I asked Grady Hendrix, one of the founding members of Subway Cinema, a couple of questions. And, of course, this is all new to me. And I loaded the file on my computer, and I was doing something with it. And don't ask me why. I deleted the file from my recorder. And then something, I don't know what went wrong, the file got corrupted on my computer, and now I can't save it. So, lesson number one for me is, back up your stupid files. It's something that I would definitely learn in the future. So, unfortunately, I don't have the interview I had with him, which was a really great interview. I'm going to try to paraphrase just a little about what we spoke about. I asked him how Subway Cinema came about, which was really the main question I wanted to know. And he explained to me that these were all guys that they used to see each other at the Asian Music Palace, which was a theater in Chinatown in New York City, which showed Hong Kong films, greats. I remember going there and seeing, I went there twice. I saw Once Upon a Time in China Part 2, which, of course, the great Jet Li film, co-starring Donnie Yen. And I saw a Brigitte Lin film, although off the top of my head, I can't remember which one it was. It wasn't a Bride of White Hair, but it was something else from her. So I know I saw two films there. I had learned about it a little later, but these guys, you know, when it got shut down, you know, they were upset. Many was upset. I was upset. Many people were upset about, you know, this was the place to go to catch films on the big screen, like, you know, films from Choi Hark, films from Stephen Chow. Where else can you see these on the big screen? In those times, that was the only place was the Music Palace. There's no other place. And so he, along with Goran Topalov and some of the other guys, they all got together and tried to start something to save the Asian Music Palace. But unfortunately, they were not successful in that adventure. And after that, they decided to try something new. They all tried to pool their money together to see if they could find a way for themselves to rent, you know, theater time and bring about, you know, some old school Asian cinema to the big screen for people still to come see. And that's how Subway Cinema really began. I don't know how many years since Subway Cinema has been around. It's got to be around, must be about 15, 17 years, I would guess. I'm trying to remember the year Palace shut down. I think it's late 90s, 98, 99, I think. So, you know, they've been around since that time. And you know, that's how they got their start. And we're all so happy that they did. I also asked them, because Grady is the guy who does the interviews, mostly, for the talent that comes in to the festival every year. And I asked him, you know, how much research he does before, you know, having the interview. And he says it's not really that much. I mean, he does usually try to catch a few of their films, and he'll check out their their Hong Kong Movie Database page, and also maybe Wikipedia and what have you, just to try to get a feel what films they've been in. And, you know, and what their career has been like. And he kind of goes with that and asks his questions based off of that. And I also asked him, was there ever a interview that went, like, really wrong? And he said, yeah, he talked about one time. He once interviewed Roo Sung-bum, one of my favorite actors. We've spoke about him a couple of times in our early episodes, the star of The Unjust, one of my all-time favorite films, and I'm just a big fan of him as an actor. And he says he had an interview with him, but the interview went really badly, as he just didn't want to talk about the movie, more interested in talking about hanging out, going clubbing and stuff like that. Really had no interest in speaking at all about, you know, movie business, which is, of course, why he's there. So I was not there for that interview, but I heard that, according to Grady, it went really, really badly. I also asked him, how long, is this like a year-long thing to prepare for? And he explained to me that usually there's a bit of a break for a few months after the festival closes before they get back together again and start working on it. So the real crux of it is probably a 6-month journey where they really are getting into getting everything prepared, getting guests, watching films and trying to screen what they want to show. Again, I'm paraphrasing his answers. Believe me, he was much more colorful and entertaining than I am trying to tell you what he said. And I really apologize for not backing up that file, because it was a really great, about 5 minutes I spent with the man. And I'm so generous to give me his time. Him and his lovely wife waited while he did this for me, and I really appreciate it. And I don't know if Grady's ever going to listen to this podcast, but if he does, I apologize. I feel so stupid having that file corrupted without backing it up. But I do love the New York Asian Film Festival. I love all the work that Grady, Goran, Samuel, Rufus, and everybody else do. They're just tremendous guys. And I do have a file with Rufus that I spoke to, and we're going to talk about that on our next podcast, which will also be our final podcast as we continue to talk about the New York Asian Film Festival. So look for that. That should be up in about a week or so. And until that time, I want to thank everybody for listening. Bye-bye.